You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Lots to get to today on our podcast. Christina Long will be in the studio a little bit later as we talk about Arkansas and Ole Miss. But we begin the show today with Brad Logan. Brad is works for the 24/7 sports site Inside the Rebels there in Oxford. Also hosts a couple of podcasts, Believe in Ole Miss podcast, the Red and Blue Crew podcast. And he's been kind enough to join us today. Brad, thanks for being here.
I appreciate the opportunity, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so what's the feeling down in Oxford about this game?
Well, obviously heading into the season, we talked to a lot of the different players. And we pretty much got the same sentiment that this was a make or break year, I guess, Matt, is the best way to put it. We asked Jordan Watkins during Ole Miss's media availability, and he said we all came back, we being Jordan Watkins, Jackson Dart, Caden Prescoring, the tight end, the defensive tackle, J.J. Pegues. We came back to win a national championship. So this team has the objective of making the college football playoff. That objective can be attained, although it's a razor-thin margin at the moment. That obviously would have to include a win Saturday against Arkansas. It would have to include a win over Georgia. So a lot of hills to climb to get to that point. But when you lose a game like Ole Miss did to Kentucky, that took a lot of shine off the season. The LSU loss, I think, hurt from a fan base standpoint. From what I've been told by the fans is, you know, that's always a big rivalry game. And to lead that game going into the final minute of regulation, only to lose in overtime, that was more of a gut punch. But I do believe this team, had it be coming into the game on Saturday, 7-1 versus 6-2. I think that's the big, big thing right now. And if this team does run the table and finish 10-2 and kind of gets in a log jam with maybe LSU, maybe with Missouri, maybe with Alabama, Tennessee, and it comes back that they're not getting in because of the loss against Kentucky, they have only themselves to blame.
You and I were talking a little bit earlier about Fayetteville and how tough of a place Fayetteville has been to play for Ole Miss. They've only won here two times, I think, at least as an SEC team. The last being when Houston Nutt came back with his first Ole Miss team in 2008. It seems like Ole Miss has brought some really good teams up here and left mightily disappointed.
They have. 13-2 is Arkansas's record in Fayetteville over Ole Miss. And Matt, that's actually over the history of the series between the two that date back to 1908. Ole Miss has just had their number, and they being Ole Miss. And you talk about that 08 game, and that was a very energy-charged game. Coach Bobby Petrino, of course, at Arkansas. Coach Houston Nutt, fresh off that 07 win over LSU over in Tiger Stadium when Darren McFadden continues to score touchdowns on LSU. It was a game, that 08 game, in which both teams were 3-4, had not had great seasons up until that point. It was cold that night. And I'll never forget this. Only a nerd like me would know that Kenny Williamson, who's currently an SEC head official, was the head official for that game. And Ole Miss was in control the entire game and played really well up until the last 5 or 7 minutes. And that's when Arkansas would score a touchdown. Within the last 2 or 3 minutes, they would kick an onside kick. It would be ruled on the field that the ball would go to Ole Miss if they recovered it. But they realized that Arkansas had recovered it and he was in bounds, the Arkansas kickoff man, and the ball went over to Arkansas. A couple of a couple of pass interference penalties. One of those offensive pass interference on Arkansas on a deep pass, and that kind of, you know, washed the game away. But Arkansas was driving to score, and Matt, had that happen, the Razorbacks would be 14-2 against Ole Miss in Fayetteville. And that is just an astounding number. And it's really funny that you look at this game and, while Ole Miss fans aren't laughing, but I think if you look at this game objectively, crazy things have happened, not only in Fayetteville, but in Oxford as well. You talk about the 7-OT game. You talk about the Hunter Henry heave. You talk about the game in Little Rock in 2018 when Ole Miss would connect with Dawson Knox and get a big touchdown, and the Rebels would win in Little Rock, a place that actually Ole Miss actually doesn't play very poorly. They've won the last couple games in Little Rock. Mm-hmm. They won on a field goal back in 2012 in Little Rock. A lot of these games that Ole Miss have won, you hear me talking about, Matt, they happen in Oxford. Ole Miss won an OT game a couple of years ago with KJ Jefferson at quarterback. So, and the 2-point conversion gets knocked down. It's a wild game. And it's a wild game for folks not named Arkansas or Ole Miss. It's going to be an entertaining game, I have no doubt. I think this will be a close game. I think the odds makers have it like 7, maybe right now is where it sits. I think easily Arkansas covers that and maybe even win the game. So, I think it's setting up to be a really fun day in Fayetteville. And I just hope the weather holds off and everyone can have a big time, because this rivalry, and I do think it's a rivalry, Matt, goes back, like I said, a long time back to 1908. And I'm excited about the game on Saturday.
Arkansas beat Mississippi State down there the other day. And I know Mississippi State, they're terrible this year. I mean, they're just an awful football team. Defensively is bad, maybe a defense as I've ever seen in the SEC. But for Arkansas to win that game in the state of Mississippi and then turn around and play Ole Miss the next week, I wonder, does that get people's attention there more so than, like, if they had beaten, I don't know, Kentucky or Vanderbilt like that?
Yeah, I really don't think it does, Matt. Okay. And the reason I think so is because each game that Ole Miss plays going out is legitimately their college football playoff lives are on the line every game. So someone asked me earlier today, did I think that Ole Miss might be overlooking Arkansas to get to Georgia? Absolutely not, because if they don't win – on Saturday, the Georgia game is meaningless. And then you start talking about how you're going to hold the team together. And you start talking about things you don't want to talk about if you're a college football program. But Ole Miss doesn't have to right now, because they've got a huge game and a huge opportunity ahead. This Arkansas team, you know, as you guys well know, Jaquinn Jackson was having a great year and he was injured. But how about Braylon Russell coming in and playing as well as he did at running back and running all over Mississippi State? We've seen Armstrong have a big year at wide receiver. So there are a number of challenges that Ole Miss is going to have to deal with on offense, not to mention the quarterback, Jalen Green. I just look at this from a standpoint of if Ole Miss can somehow throw their running backs open. And what I mean by that is throw the ball down the field. They've had offensive line issues. If they can somehow throw the ball down the field, create some separation from those defensive backs and really target a couple of places on that offense, that defensive backfield and utilize some of those receivers that Ole Miss has, that possibly could allow Ole Miss to run the football. But if Ole Miss does not run the football, it's going to be a long day in Fayetteville. But yeah, I do not think Ole Miss is in any way overlooking the Razorbacks. I expect them to come out really focused and really ready to play on Saturday.
Every team's going to have the games that they think that got away. Like for Arkansas, they might say, hey, you know, if a fourth quarter goes differently in Stillwater, or if the fourth quarter goes differently against A&M, Ole Miss, it's literally two plays. It's two fourth downs. It's a long fourth down against Kentucky that the Wildcats converted, a couple of fourth downs that LSU converted on its final drive of regulation there in Baton Rouge. Either of those could count toward this. But the point being that Ole Miss, they're right there. I mean, they're literally just a couple of plays from being an undefeated team. I've got them in my SEC efficiency rating as the best team in the SEC, and that takes their offense into consideration, their defense into consideration too. It feels like a two things. It feels like a disappointment that they're sitting there with two losses, but I also feel like they're a lot more dangerous team than most of the teams that are sitting there with two losses right now.
Yeah, most people, you're an anomaly, Matt. Most people don't see this program being as talented as it is on paper. Now, obviously, you have to perform on the field, and in some ways they have not done that. But you talk about Ole Miss is two plays away from being undefeated. There's truth in that. But you also look at the fact that against LSU, Ole Miss did not score three times inside the red zone and very easily could have been up 27-3 or 27-7 over LSU. They weren't. They were only up 17-13 at the half. They allowed LSU to stay in the game, and they lost the game. A couple weeks before, obviously, Ole Miss just didn't do anything in the first half. And credit, a lot of that has to do with that Kentucky defensive front. They were playing really well. I don't know if they pushed the I don't care button, but it feels like they're close. And it is just simply a terrible loss right now for Ole Miss as Kentucky sits at 1-4 in the conference. And they were just beaten badly this past Saturday by Auburn. You talk about two plays, and I agree to that, but Ole Miss didn't win those two games because they did not run the football effectively. Mm-hmm. And they didn't score when they needed to. Ole Miss is really good in between the 20s against LSU. They couldn't score. And, yeah, they being LSU, converted a 4th-and-7 to Mason, that tight end, Mason Taylor, that's so good, and they converted another fourth down. And then, of course, we know what happened at that point. But if you allow teams like Kentucky and LSU to stay in the game and you don't put them away, I could say the same thing about South Carolina, and Ole Miss did that in Columbia. But the striking resemblance between the situations that Ole Miss faces, it was an early game against South Carolina. It's going to be an early game at Arkansas. I'm expecting a decent Ole Miss crowd, but a very raucous environment. I have no doubt that everyone I've talked to in Fayetteville, the fans are really excited about this one. Same could be said for South Carolina. So many similarities. Ole Miss came out and dictated the line of scrimmage, and they forced turnovers. I think in order to win at Arkansas, they're going to have to force Taylen Green to turn the football over. They're going to have to limit Brandon Russell as much as they can and do something in bracket coverage, Armstrong, whatever you have to do to keep him from getting the ball. I understand there's Tesla and there's other receivers they can get the ball to. But I think most importantly for Ole Miss defensively is limit the running attack, spy Taylen Green, and limit him. But offensively, Matt, they've got to run the football. Whether it be they have to throw them open, they've got to run the football in order to win.
There have been a lot of upsets in the SEC this year. Arkansas over Tennessee, Vanderbilt over Alabama. It feels like Ole Miss losing to Kentucky, especially being at home, that's the real disappointing outcome, I think, of the season so far.
I don't think there's any doubt. And I think you have to include Vanderbilt and Alabama in that. Now, when Alabama lost to Vanderbilt, we were in the press room watching the game with Lane Kiffin. It was a weird moment. I was in the back with the camera, and the camera crew was in the back. The TV was over my left shoulder, and the door to get in was behind me. So the coaches and the players have to come behind me to walk towards the podium where everyone's forcing. Well, Lane Kiffin walks in. Everyone is turned around watching the TV, and Lane walks in and says, "What is going on?" And we pointed to the TV. And so we all stopped and watched as Vanderbilt beats Alabama. And at that point, we thought it was a huge upset. Now, I'll be honest, as well as they play Texas, now they're going to Auburn as a 7-point underdog. I don't know how they're that much of an underdog
against a
really poor Auburn team. Yeah. Diego Pivey has already proven that he can beat Hugh Freeze when he was over in the state of New Mexico. So there have been a lot of upsets, and none more just jumping off the page than Kentucky. And the reason I say that is where Kentucky is now versus where Vanderbilt is now. And so I think if you look at this from a 10,000 feet, if you can somehow finish 10-2, chaos continue to happen, like chaos like A&M losing this weekend to South Carolina, or LSU and Alabama going to war, and whichever team needs to lose for Ole Miss's perspective can lose. You know, you need, if you beat Arkansas, you need Arkansas to continue to have chaos and to beat some teams down the stretch. So Ole Miss needs Arkansas to beat Texas in a couple of weeks. Well, I think that is a great opportunity to happen. So Ole Miss needs chaos and they need to win out. But yeah, that Kentucky game just jumps off the page for Ole Miss.
Talking about watching upsets, we watched Kentucky upset Ole Miss on the 60-yard screen at AT&T Stadium with about 60,000 other people. And that was the one thing that brought Arkansas and A&M fans together that day, cheering for the Wildcats. Trey Harris's status, great Ole Miss receiver. He was out with a hip injury against Oklahoma. Where do you think he is for this weekend?
Well, before the game last week against Oklahoma, we were told that he was going to be able to go. He's got a lower body injury. We don't have any more specifics than that. Remember, he had that Achilles injury earlier this year, and he was able to fight through that. He played against Kentucky and then played some against LSU, but came out in the latter part of that game after he had the lower body injury. He did not even suit up against Oklahoma. Now, some have told me that there's a chance he could go against Arkansas, but as of right now, as we record, I do not expect Trey Harris to play. As it stands right now, the wide receiver room is going to have Caden Lee, Jordan Watkins. Caden Lee is on the injury report as of last week. We do not expect that to be an issue. We expect him to play along with Jordan Watkins. Ole Miss has to utilize the middle of the field. And you know, they had not done that all year with their tight ends, Caden Prescorn and Daquan Wright, and also Jordan Watkins, who's a slot receiver, until this past weekend. And a lot of that attributes to Jackson Dart was able to go to his second and third progression. And we've not seen him be able to do that against LSU and Kentucky because pressure got on him so fast. I do think we'll see him be better if Ole Miss can do a good job of protecting Jackson Dart, keeping him in the pocket so he can make his progressions. But I really like what Coach Sam Pittman has done with his defense. He's got a very talented defensive front. The left tackle or the left end, number 40, is preseason All-American. He's done a great job for Arkansas. He's going to be very tough to block, and it'll be interesting to see what Ole Miss can do. I'm really fascinated with Ole Miss's offense versus Arkansas's defense to see how much separation the receivers can get and what type of decisions Jackson Dart is going to make on Saturday.
Chris Paul, former Razorback linebacker, what's he added to the defense?
He's arguably the best player on the team. He's leading this team in tackles. He is a team leader on and off the field, and he's an incredible football player. One thing that I've noticed is his side-to-side speed, like inline-to-inline or team-line-to-team-line, you know, his side-to-side range. And the good thing about Poo Paul is what I saw against Mississippi State this past Saturday is, for example, Braylon Russell peels off a, 90-yard run when Arkansas was faced with like a maybe first and 10 from their own two or three. Mm-hmm. And I think I counted three or four Mississippi State players that got their hands on Russell. Now, Russell's a great running back, and he's tough to get down. I'm not taking anything away from him. But they touched him three or four times and still didn't put him to the ground. I mean, that's one thing Poupon has done a really good job this year, is not allowing the receivers and the quarterbacks and the running backs to get that extra yardage after the contact is getting to the ground. Suntrain Perkins is also a defensive end that's done really good. He's soaking wet, maybe 210, number four, the Gatorade Player of the Year, and out of Mississippi a couple years ago, a five-star player. He and Poop Hall have been kind of anchoring that linebacking core, and it's really been fun to watch those guys kind of play together. But the straw that stirs the drink, Matt, to be honest with you, is the Ole Miss defensive front. And Walter Nolan came out in the second half, did not return, and he's dealing with a lower body injury. If he doesn't go, you're going to see Akilo Stone, Xavier Harris. They're simply not at the caliber of talent that Walter Nolan is. Nolan has been taking double and triple teams all year. So if he's not able to go, expect Arkansas to be able to do a lot more things offensively if Walter Nolan's not on the field.
Brad, you've been great with your time. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, have a great trip up here to Northwest Arkansas this weekend. When we come back, Christina Long will be in studio with me, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being here. Christina Long in studio with me. I want to tell you about our friends about Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina, good morning.
Good morning.
Appreciate you being here. I've lost track of what we were going to talk about here. We were talking in between or during the break about we carved pumpkins last night, and I think I've got the scariest pumpkin on my street. I just go with the traditional. Like when you carve pumpkins, what do you?
That's what I usually do because I'm really bad at it, and
I'm not an artist.
I have no patience. I'm an extremely impatient person, and so I just want to get it done. And I know that if I aim too high and then it doesn't go exactly right, I'm gonna be upset. So I just go easy.
I got the biggest knife out of the kitchen that I could find yesterday, probably like a 12-inch blade. And that's what I'm working on the pumpkin with. And Ashley's got this old pumpkin carving kit.
We got one of those that we're going to use.
But the problem is, like, they're all broken. And they're all, like, turned sideways.
They're very easy to destroy, yeah. And what did your kids carve? Did they do any?
Well, my youngest said the pumpkin smelled bad, so she left the room and went and watched... something. I don't know what it was. The other two, Jack helped me with the scary pumpkin, which again, when I do a pumpkin, it's just the triangle eyes, some sort of nose, maybe like a half a triangle nose, and then you just do the mouth. I mean, it's just a traditional pumpkin. The girls decided that they wanted unicorn pumpkins.
Oh.
And so Ashley figured out how to draw. She's a pretty good artist, and so she drew a unicorn outline on there, and then she spent 2 hours carving it for them. One of them was in the living room watching TV. The other one was just sitting there doing who knows what.
That's so funny. That's impressive, though.
So it was pumpkin carving night for our kids and ended up just being basically me and my wife.
Yeah.
Sitting in the kitchen floor carving pumpkins.
Yeah, me and Corey are going to do ours tonight. I'm excited about it. We haven't done it in years.
It's fun. It's so much fun. The one thing I wish I would have done, remember when I was in kindergarten, my teacher, we carved pumpkins, and then she took the seeds and cooked them. And
I know a lot of people used to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we didn't do that last
time. I've never
time.
Done
I wish
it.
We done
yeah.
That.
I want to do it at some point. I've never done it before.
Pepitas.
Yeah.
What exactly. They're called.
I buy them. I used to buy them from Aldi and eat them all the time. They're so salty. It was always painful.
I didn't know you could buy those.
Yeah, you can get them. They're good.
Interesting.
Good snack.
So we had Brad Logan on, and I don't know how much of his interview you heard, but he was talking about just how weird the Arkansas Ole Miss series is. And it brought to mind a story I wrote, and I thought this tells you how fast time flies by. I thought it was something I'd written about maybe 4 years ago. It was 8 years ago that I wrote of Arkansas and Ole Miss, just the history between these teams. The headline was, Arkansas Ole Miss has been 108 years of unpredictable. you can read that on our website if you want to, but we're going to kind of go through some of this stuff. And it begins with, there's every good rivalry has a disputed game. Like, mm-hmm. like who won? Who didn't? Like, and so like here in Arkansas Ole Miss, if you look at the Arkansas game notes, it gives you one record. If you look at the Ole Miss game notes, it gives you another record. It's because in 1914, the Razorbacks claimed Ole Miss used an ineligible player named Joe Evans in a game, and Arkansas won by virtue of a forfeit, and Ole Miss disputes that.
That's
so,
really funny.
That's like the baseline of any rivalry, yeah. I feel like.
Do you think this is a rivalry?
Yes, okay. I absolutely do.
Interesting.
I think, you know, and I've always said this about Arkansas and its rivals, because I don't know that Arkansas's got just any, you know, true rival. Mm-hmm. I feel like Arkansas's rival is, in a lot of cases, based on where you live and who the fans are that you interact with. You get east and southeast of Little Rock, it's Ole Miss. There's no doubt about it. Hmm. I think, you know, for a lot of people, and especially older people who, you know, they remember the games in the 50s and the 60s, and a lot of people don't know this. Arkansas Ole Miss has been played consecutively more than any other series on Arkansas' schedule. They played, I think, like the last 10, 11 years that Arkansas was in the Southwest Conference. Oh, it was an early season game. And then they come into the SEC. They're in the same division. They play every year. They played Ole Miss every year, I think, since 1980 or 1981.
Wow.
So, I think for people, say, like, if you're in Forest City, Pine Bluff, Dumas, you know, that area, West Memphis, I think there's a pretty good chance that Ole Miss is the team that you see as a rival. If you live down in lower Arkansas, it's maybe LSU. You know, maybe if you're a certain age, it's Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, there may be some people up here who legitimately feel like Missouri is a rival because those are the people that they interact with on a fairly routine basis. So I believe Arkansas Ole Miss is a rivalry. And I think, you know, I mentioned this with Brad. If it goes to a 9-game schedule, Arkansas's three permanent opponents are going to be Missouri, Ole Miss, and Texas.
Yeah.
Because those are, you know,
right. I
mean, now Missouri, you can call it whatever you want to call it. Those two are, they're stuck together, for maybe lack of a better word. But Ole Miss and Texas, I think those are our true rivalries for Arkansas.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it like that, but that does make sense.
They used to play in Memphis all the time.
Oh, really? Interesting. I mean, yeah, I guess it makes sense. It's kind of in between.
Well, it was Memphis for Ole Miss for a long time was what Little Rock has been for Arkansas.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And they would play in Jackson. Like, Arkansas played Ole Miss in Jackson. They played Ole Miss in Memphis. But Memphis obviously is a big Ole Miss town. I think if you ask people in Memphis, they may tell you that Ole Miss is the most popular college team in that city. I bring that up to tell you, in 1938 in Memphis, the game between Arkansas and Ole Miss ended in a brawl between the teams and their fans. This is an account in the Hope Star. A player from Ole Miss named Bill Schneller returned an interception 54 yards for a touchdown, and he ran the final 30 yards backward while thumbing his nose at Arkansas's players. And then he thumbed his nose at the Arkansas fans when he crossed the goal line. And this is according to a book that was written in 1980 about Ole Miss football. It said, when the gun sounded, the fans poured onto the field to fight. It was wild. People were fighting everywhere.
And that was the 30s?
This was 1938.
That's so funny because I feel like when I think about 30s football, I don't think of fights or like trash
apparently
talk
they were like
or
throwing
anything
benches
like that.
And people were hospitalized.
That's
and I mean, it
crazy.
Was it was I don't think it's like a brawl nowadays. At a game where you've got so much police personnel and security that's going to be able to disperse people. I mean,
This is more backyard football kind of stuff. But it's interesting that it was the fans, too. I was thinking, like, you know, now you just get like benches clear kind of stuff, but that it's fans coming onto the field.
Imagine
to
what
fight.
Greg Sankey would have fined them in 1938.
Oh my God.
Of course, you know, you had the years where Johnny Vaught and Frank Broyles, you know, they coached. Broyles never beat Vaught, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, there was a game, I think it was like 1960, 61, they played in Little Rock. And I read a Sports Illustrated story about this. Ole Miss, it looked like they missed a field goal toward the end of the game, maybe it was the last play of the game. Arkansas says that he missed it. The official said he made it, and Broyles said, we're never playing Ole Miss again.
That's so crazy.
And
I didn't know that.
I think Frank actually may have gotten reprimanded by the Southwest Conference for his comments about that game. The Powder River play, one of the great games in Arkansas history, was against Ole Miss. They were ranked in the top 10. Arkansas beat them at War Memorial Stadium in 1954. That's the game I think that a lot of people say gave Arkansas its statewide, you know, love affair. Mm-hmm. And these are just non-conference games. Then you move into conference play, and I mean the Henry Heave. Brad talked about that. That was a game I was at.
It
was just, you just couldn't believe what had happened there. And the feeling, that I can remember two times walking out of a visiting stadium, and it just felt like a bomb had gone off in the city because there was nobody around. People were just devastated. It was 2007 in Baton Rouge at Tiger Stadium when Arkansas won in triple overtime, and it felt like they had killed LSU's national championship hopes. And of course, LSU went on to win the championship as a two-loss team. And then that night in Oxford, because that was the closest at that time and really ever that Ole Miss had come to playing in the SEC championship game, and it was just pulled right out from underneath them with that play.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's interesting, you know, because when I just think of Arkansas Ole Miss, you know, I think of like, oh, they've had some weird games recently, but it really, I hadn't really thought before about how far back that goes and how they have played crazy games for, you know, decades. So yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting game. I'm looking at the Winsopedia comparison right now, and it looks like they've played every year going back to 85.
I think it's even further.
It is. It's just there's one line that's so small because it's such a close game.
There's a tie.
It's 81. Yeah, you're right.
There's a tie, I think, in 1984. It's 84. Ken Hatfield's first game as Arkansas's coach.
Yeah, 84. So, yeah, it does go back to 81. You're right. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, how it's gone over the last few years. And then Arkansas has beaten them in years that they weren't supposed to.
Even think about Brett Bielema's last Razorback. I don't know if it was his last win, but it was definitely his last SEC win. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss has beaten him by 24 points in Oxford.
Yeah.
And Arkansas, with Cole Kelly at quarterback, who was a backup at that time, they come back and they beat Ole Miss there. Connor Limpert kicked a field goal at, you know, basically the buzzer, and they beat him 38-37. It's just, and we can, I can recount Ole Miss wins over Arkansas. I remember Bryson Rose hitting a field goal at War Memorial Stadium in 2012 to beat Arkansas, a game that it felt like Arkansas really didn't have much of a chance to be in. And by the way, at that game, there was this feeling that I had. It was like you could see one program going one way and one program going the other. And it's kind of continued. I know Ole Miss has had some bad years since then when Matt Luke was their coach. But for the most part, it was like that was the shift.
Yeah.
Because Arkansas had beaten them the previous 2 years in Petrino Nut games. And that was the shift back. And, you know, that was Hugh Freeze's first year in Oxford. And it really has. I know Arkansas's beaten them, but just in terms of overall program success, Ole Miss has clearly had the better program over that time.
Right, for sure. And especially recently. I mean, Arkansas, yeah, has kind of stolen a couple games from them. I mean, I shouldn't say stolen because they haven't. Arkansas's wins over them in the last, I mean, there's what? 2020, 33-21, and then 2022, 42-27. Those are not close games. So they're not, I shouldn't say they're stealing wins.
They were closer than they.
Well, yeah.
Well, so in 22, that was, I think Arkansas got out to like a 35-6 lead. Ole Miss tried to make it close at the end. 2020, that was a great game. Mm-hmm. That was the Hudson-Clark three-interception game. I think Arkansas had seven interceptions. It's still one of my favorite Hogs Illustrated covers we have. It's a picture of Hudson-Clark intercepting a pass, and the headline just says, take your pick.
That's awesome. Because
there's seven interceptions in the game.
Yeah.
And I think it was also it was a great picture, and it was like, just take your pick of which picture you want to use, Blake.
I've got a cool story about that 2020 game. So I have a friend that lives within earshot of the stadium in Fayetteville, and the telecast is usually about 30 seconds past, you know, the live action. And Ole Miss has the ball in Arkansas territory. We're watching on TV, and then we hear the cannon go off, and the stadium's going crazy, and we're like, well, what's going on? Ole Miss has the ball, and they only shoot the cannon when Arkansas scores. Mm-hmm. And then the TV catches up, and Arkansas got a pick six.
That's awesome.
I think they had two pick six. Jalen Catalon had one in that game, and Grant Morgan had one near the end to help.
I think it was the Grant Morgan one.
Yeah, because I think that was right at the end. I think the Ole Miss had gotten the ball, and they're trying to drive down and maybe win the game. And then he picks it off, takes it back for a touchdown, and then at that point, the game is over. We didn't even mention the 7 overtime game between these two teams.
Oh, my God.
Which was, like, one of the great...
What year was that? I don't even
remember. It was 2001.
Oh, man. That's crazy. Yeah. I forgot about that one.
I mean, there are so many memories that I have of Arkansas Ole Miss. It's... Maybe you can tell. It's one of my favorite games that's played every year just because you just never know what's going to happen between these teams. And like Brad said, there's a 50% chance of rain on Saturday. Looks like it's going to rain, you know, for quite a bit of the day. I mean, that could – that
crazy
has,
things happen in the rain, yeah.
Exactly. Rain can be a great equalizer. When we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about this Arkansas-Ole Miss matchup. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Richard Cross, who is a radio commentator in Mississippi, is going to join us on our podcast tomorrow. It'll be great to talk with him. Also, he does some work for SEC Network, really knowledgeable about not just Ole Miss, but also about the SEC. Looking forward to talking to him some about this game. I was reading a story yesterday, Christina, at The Athletic. It was written by Seth Emerson, and it was about how close the games in the SEC have been this year. The average margin of victory is 13 points, and you might look at that and say, well, that doesn't seem very close, but you have to factor in there games like 58-25 Arkansas over Mississippi State. That's going to, you know, it's going to inflate that number a little bit. Basically, it's the closest that games have been in the SEC in 10 years, the margin of victory. And, you know, it's an incomplete picture. It could end up being closer, could end up being, you know, there could be some blowouts at the end of the year. There are a lot of theories about what might be causing this. You know, you don't have division play anymore, so you've got new matchups, maybe more competitive matchups than you got during division play. Obviously, you've got the two new teams in the conference, and Texas, they've played some, both of them, they played close games. They both played blowout games. There's a thought that maybe the SEC is just not quite as dominant as it's been in the past, which, I mean, that's certainly, that's up for debate. It could be the fact that, you know, now in the 12-team playoff era, you don't have to win with style points quite as much. And, you know, maybe teams think about the Tennessee-Oklahoma game where they're up 22-3 and they basically just take the air out of the ball.
Yeah.
Brad Logan was saying it was kind of the same thing when Ole Miss played Oklahoma last week. So lots of interesting theories about what might be causing this, but it's certainly something I've known. And then it's not just the number of close games. It's the number of games where it's like, well, I didn't see that coming.
Yes.
You know, Arkansas beating Tennessee, mm-hmm. prime example. Vanderbilt beating Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's just a totally different feel in the SEC this year.
It's become a thing where I just feel like you never know. I felt that way with Arkansas. Like, I was talking to some people last night who were asking me, you know, what I thought was going to happen this weekend. And I just feel like with both of these teams, you've gotten such different results as far as – it really just depends – you know, who shows up, like what version of each of these teams shows up. I mean, Ole Miss lost to Kentucky.
Yeah, that may be the upset of the year
in the
SEC.
That's crazy. And Arkansas beat Tennessee. You know, like both of them have done things they on paper should not have done. And so it's just, it just feels like, especially I think this matchup in particular is a good example of it, of it's so hard to predict and it's so hard to, you know, we do our weekly picks and there's weeks where we're consensus across the board on who we think is going to win a game. And then we all lose because it looks like a game that's obvious. And then it turns out not to be. So, I mean, I'd be curious. I don't know if the story that you were referencing, if they compared that with any of the other conferences and how their games have been close. I'd be curious about like the Big Ten, because, you know, you've got an undefeated Indiana team in the Big Ten. And I think the Big Ten, the removal of divisions has changed a lot of things in the Big Ten. So I'd be curious, you know, what's how that kind of compares across those leagues, because I guess I hesitate to say the SEC is less dominant. I just think we're catching it in an interesting year. We talked recently about how it seems like there's not, you know, a lights out Heisman favorite future first overall NFL draft pick quarterback in the SEC right now. You know, you're kind of getting some mixed results from some of these guys. There's, you know, lots of great talent and guys putting up great games, but there's not kind of that, you know, there's not a Joe Burrow or whoever you pick your SEC quarterback from the last 10 years. And that doesn't mean that they're all bad, but you're getting, it's, I don't want to say down years, but you're getting an Alabama team that's not doing what Alabama teams usually do. You're getting a Georgia team that lost a game people thought it would win, you know? So you're getting so many results. The teams at the top are getting different results than maybe they have before. And I don't know, that could be, you know, a division thing. That could be, you know, I don't know. I think just this season, I think it's too early to say whether this is going to be a trend or if this is a this season thing based on just kind of how the SEC has shaken out.
Do we get to count Baker Mayfield as a SEC quarterback?
SEC
now?
Legend, Baker Mayfield.
He'll be one day.
In that class. Yeah.
For sure. You know, one thing that I think Ole Miss, this is really not just this game, but, you know, they play Florida in a few weeks. They end the year with Mississippi State, which they ought to be able to play their JV team and beat Mississippi State. But they've got to be perfect to get to the playoff. And sometimes when you are so focused on perfection, it can really cause you to tense up. And I wonder if that's going to be something that affects them down the stretch here.
They can't lose another game.
They can't lose another game and make the playoff. And so, and I'm sure they're hearing it. You know, it's like, hey, you guys would be undefeated if you would have just stopped that fourth and whatever against Kentucky. You'd be undefeated if you could have gotten Garrett Nussmeier to throw incomplete on one of those fourth downs in Baton Rouge. I wonder how loose they are for this game, because it doesn't matter what sport, doesn't matter if it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever. You can't play it the way you're supposed to play it if you're always worried about making mistakes. And I wonder how much of that factors into this game. That's one of those things that I don't feel like you can ever really qualify. You know what I mean? But it's certainly something that I think is kind of there beneath the surface in this game is how loose is Ole Miss going to be able to play in this game? Because, you know, if they're uptight, boy, that feels like that's an advantage for Arkansas, who goes out there and feels like they got nothing to lose in this game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's something that reflects a lot in coaching. I think, you know, you see different teams respond to things like that differently. I mean, what was it? Was it last year or the year before when Alabama, it like looked like they were having a down year, and then they made it, you know, they made the playoff after everybody had counted them out like for halfway through the season. And, you know, that was a Nick Saban coached team, obviously. And so it was just, it's interesting how different teams respond to things like that. I think right now people are, I don't know that people are counting Ole Miss out necessarily, but I think people are definitely looking at them like, okay, you get, you know, you can't lose another game. And I think people thought they were really a favorite for the playoff before the season. And so I think how they react to that will say a lot about coaching. But I mean, it's got to be on their mind. Of course it will be. It's just, how do they play within that?
They fell in the AP poll too this week. Mm-hmm. Not that the AP poll means anything.
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, voters are voters, and essentially with the College Football Playoff Committee, it's 12 voters.
Yeah.
And so beating Oklahoma the way they did last week did not impress the AP voters. We don't know what kind of bearing it had on the College Football Playoff voters. I don't think the first playoff poll comes out next week, I think.
I think so. I think it comes out on election night, which is going to be a wild time.
the real election we're all waiting on. They've got to have some style points, I feel like, here down the stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
They got to beat Georgia, which that's going to be tough enough as it is. But let's say they're able to beat Georgia by even a point. I feel like they're going to have some style points in these other games.
They have to prove it. They have to show that they can get past some of those problems, and that they can close out those close games that they've lost to LSU and to Kentucky. I mean, like you said, it's their one play away, but you have to keep showing that you can put opponents away, you know?
I feel like there's going to be a log jam. Like, every year we focus typically on one loss teams mm-hmm. in the playoff, or at least in the last 10 years in the old playoff format, because it was always a couple of one loss teams that felt like that was trying to get into that number four spot. Sometimes it'd be an undefeated team in Florida State's case. But with this one, I feel like there's going to be a log jam of two loss teams. Mm-hmm. Alabama may be a two loss team. What if Alabama's sitting there and Ole Miss is sitting there as two loss teams, and hey, you both beat Georgia.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so you got that on your record, on your resume. But then what did you do in your other games? How do you decide
who has the better team?
Like, I wouldn't want that job. Better?
I know. It sounds terrible.
Let's call Hunter and see what he has to say.
Yeah, I know.
He's going to be one of the ones that's making that decision this year.
This will be a wild year for it. This is a great first year for him with all the crazy things that have gone on this season.
It's pretty crazy. We're going to talk just some head-to-head matchups. You can read this full story on our website. It'll go online tomorrow on Thursday at wholehogsports.com, but we'll give you a little tease of it right now. It's from our magazine, Hogs Illustrated. If you're a Hogs Illustrated subscriber, you can check this out on our e-edition right now on our website, or, of course, you can find a magazine on newsstands where they're sold. But basically what we do is we just look at quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, and who's got the advantage head-to-head. And we'll start with quarterback. You got an interesting quarterback matchup this weekend between Talen Green, who is a National Player of the Week. Walter Camp of Foundation gave him their National Player of the Week award this week. It's the first time that a Razorback has had that award since Ryan Mallett in 2010. Pretty hard to believe. On the other side, you got Jackson Dart, who's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I gave it to Jackson Dart. I think I try when I do these. I do these before during the week. So, like, right now we're working on – Ethan's working on the one for Texas. And mm-hmm. so we work on these the week before, and then we get – and then we're able to update it after that game. So I looked back at this after the Mississippi State game, and I try not to let the result I just saw influence me too much, because Talen Green obviously coming up off a tremendous performance and getting all these accolades that are well-deserved. I think he's growing a lot. I think he's getting a lot better. I also think he did that against the worst defense in the SEC. And so
maybe in the FBS.
Well, yeah, it's pretty bad. And so you have to kind of measure that. I think Dart has been more consistent. Dart has, I mean, better numbers pretty much across the board. And I just think he's been more consistent. Now, he's not perfect. He's had issues. You know, he got sacked like 7 times recently, which, you know, some of that's offensive line, some of that's quarterback, obviously. But I gave it to Dart because I think he's more consistent. And I think Green, like I said, is getting a lot better and could have, you know, he could follow up that last week. Maybe that gives him the shot in the arm he needs to finish out the rest of this year strong. But I also feel like I need to see it against a better defense.
So you gave Arkansas the advantage at tight end. Now, this was written before we knew that Ty Washington and Varkeas Gums were kicked off the team. But then you've also got – this was written before Luke Kaz and Andreas Poshka had the game they had in Starkville.
And I actually think I think I still feel this way. I guess I haven't actually thought through this yet about if I want to change it. You know, change my mind on the fly and following those dismissals of Varkeas Gums and Ty Washington. But I just think I still think the numbers that I looked at that I compared, I was comparing the whole tight end unit. I was in PFF comparing all of the tight ends from both teams. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at, you know, some of the grades, especially in blocking, Haz and Poshka are the ones that are near the top anyway. So I was kind of looking at those two guys and they're the most used, I think, also. I mean, Poshka had the injury, but so I kind of looked at who's been...
Am I saying his name wrong?
What we were told was Poshka.
Okay.
However, other people have said Poshka.
Poshka is what I heard, but
we're
hearing
a lot.
Can't say I'm right.
Kyle told me Poshka.
Okay.
Is what I've gotten.
I want to say players' names right, and I always fear saying them wrong. And then you kind of get into the habit of saying, like, Arkansas had a baseball player a couple of years ago, Jared Wagner. Spelled Wegner, and everybody called him Wegner for like half the season.
Yeah.
And then one day it was like, it's actually Wagner.
Yeah.
Well, why didn't you tell us that in the first
place? Yeah, exactly. So anyway, you're fine.
Chase a rabbit.
I did give it to Arkansas, and I feel better about that after last week. Now, again, I'm interested to see how much Arkansas continues to use its tight ends as receivers with those dismissals. And, you know, again, what we just saw, it was against the worst defense in the SEC. So how much do they continue doing that? Luke has said yesterday that he feels, you know, there was some concern about how much are they limiting him because of his back injury. Mm-hmm. He said he feels 120% best he's felt since he got on campus. So he says he's feeling a lot better. And so maybe they're able to use him more. And last week was an example of something they want to keep doing. But I do think, you know, Ole Miss has a really good tight end, and Caden, I think it's Prescorn is how I would.
Prescorn. I've got the pronunciation guy pulled up right here.
Caden Prescorn is really good. And he's a great, he's been a really good receiver.
He had a big game against OU last week.
Yeah. So it was a big tight end week. So, I mean, Ole Miss, it's a close call, I think, but I did end up giving it to Arkansas.
Posca.
That's what I thought.
Posca.
Yeah.
My apologies. I will do better moving forward. What about in the back end, secondary-wise?
Yeah, so I gave that to Ole Miss as well. This is an interesting matchup because both of their secondaries have been not the best part of their defense. And I was talking to Ethan about this morning.
It's been really rough for Arkansas the last couple of weeks.
Right, and it's so odd because the secondary has been, it's been very up and down. You know, they've had games. I guess I don't feel the Auburn game, obviously, with all those picks, and last week, you know, they put up a lot of interceptions, but they also miss a lot of tackles,
The tackling, I think, is what concerns me more. Because, yes. Look, I mean, maybe you get a quarterback to throw at your direct, maybe you make, but they haven't been a turnover, like they have.
They really haven't.
10 of their, 12 turnovers, 13 turnovers they forced this year have been in two games.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
They're opportunistic, but they've been opportunistic against bad teams.
Right, exactly. And so I think I gave it to Ole Miss because the secondary is kind of a weakness there, but it's also not that bad, I would say. And so I think even though it is probably the weakest part of the Ole Miss defense, I do still think it is better than what Arkansas has going on at defensive back. And so I just think I think Arkansas, we've seen it go both ways. We've seen them... You know, I think tackling was a concern early in the year. I remember writing a few times about, hey, what's going on with this? And now it's kind of come back. It went away for a while, and they didn't really have those kinds of issues tackling-wise in secondary, and then it came back last week. And that was against, you know, an offense that's pretty good, but not necessarily a lights-out offense. This is going to be, you know, Ole Miss's receiving core is really good. It's a little banged up, but they have a lot of depth, and they rely a lot on their passing game. And so this is going to be something that the defensive backs have to do better for Arkansas.
Ole Miss is one of the best teams, and maybe not just Kiffin is one of the best play callers in terms of putting his players in space. And I feel in this game, tackling has such a huge emphasis because they have the athletes that if they can get you one-on-one and they can beat you, the way that they can scheme up these plays, they get past that first guy, it may go for 20 more.
Yeah.
So tackling feels like a huge, huge factor in this game, or a huge consideration in this game. And then special teams, you gave the advantage to Arkansas.
Yeah, which I'd have to go back and look, but that might be the first time since maybe like early in the season that I've
UAPB
given it
maybe.
To, yeah, that I've given it to Arkansas. But Ole Miss has had some kicking issues of its own. They've missed some game winners. You know, they've had some
close games.
They
missed a tying attempt against Kentucky.
Exactly. So, you know, Caden Davis is their kicker. He's 83%, 15 of 18, which is not awful, but he has two missed extra points, which is not ideal. So they've kind of had some kicking concerns of their own. And Matthew Shipley, since he's taken over for the injured Kyle Ramsey, has been, you know, he's got the one miss. And so he's been good. The team field goal percentage is still at about 66, but Shipley's 5 of 6. So
Shipley is doing in games what he did in practice.
Yes.
And Ramsey did in games what he did in practice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean,
we talked about it earlier in the year.
I will say this,
year.
Though. Shipley was not good in practice in spring. And I don't think he was particularly good in fall either.
I agree. No, I know that. But in the scrimmages in the fall,
yeah,
he was, I think.
He was better, I think.
He was considerably better than Ramsey was.
Yeah.
The numbers were.
Yeah. So that's been interesting to see. But he's been, you know, 6 attempts so far. So I'll be interested to see how that continues to go.
I think Shipley was 6 of 8.
Yeah.
In the preseason scrimmages.
Yeah.
And Ramsey made like 33% of his field goal attempts in the preseason scrimmages.
Yeah.
That's about kind of what we're seeing statistically.
Right. So it's interesting, and I'll be curious how, assuming Shipley kind of finishes this season out, I don't know the status of Ramsey's injury, but I would imagine even if he comes back that they want to leave it with Shipley for a while. So
as long as he's making his kicks,
exactly,
I don't know why you would change
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I'll be interested to see how that continues to go. And then Devin Bale, the punter, has been fantastic. So he wins them some points in the special teams area too, just because I think it's hard to beat him with anybody, any other punter. And then return game, you know, Ole Miss has some guys back there that can do a lot, but they haven't necessarily, I don't think either team has given up huge returns, nor have they put up huge returns.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't factor that in a lot because unless a team has really been lights out in that department, I kind of, if they're about even, I don't put that into a lot of consideration.
So we're recording the podcast a little bit earlier than we usually do on Wednesdays. You come to our website throughout the day, wholehogsports.com. Chin Coleman is going to speak with reporters today and preview the Arkansas-TCU basketball exhibition game down in Fort Worth on Friday. I'm sure you'll be able to read his comments at our website early afternoon. I would assume that we've got something online. Sam Pittman will speak to reporters a couple of different times today. He's got the SEC football coaches teleconference that we'll cover. He'll also be out at the Catfish Hole tonight for his weekly coaches show. The SEC availability report comes out tonight, and we'll get a look at what the initial diagnosis is, if you will, for these Arkansas and Ole Miss players who are banged up going into this weekend's game. So lots of content at our website today, wholehogsports.com. Hope we'll see you there. Until then, we will see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.